Namaskaram. It is generally believed that what Bhagavan taught, or many people believe, but what Bhagavan taught is just the same as what is taught in all the ancient texts of Advaita Vedanta. It is true that what Bhagavan taught us is the very essence of Advaita Vedanta, but he taught it in a very, in an extremely refined and clear way. So his teachings actually are very, very unique. And he has, what is unique about his teachings is firstly, the emphasis that he put on practice, and secondly, how he clarified what is the correct practice, what is the practical implication of all that is taught in the ancient Vedanta Sastras, in the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutra, the Bhagavad Gita, and there's so many commentaries on them. What is the essential message? What is the implication? The essence of Advaita is ekam eva advaitiam. There is one only without a second. What is that one thing that alone exists? Tattvamasi, you are that. So we ourselves are that one existing reality. So what is the practical implication of this teaching has been highlighted by Bhagavan. That is, since we ourselves are that, we need not attend to anything other than ourselves. In order to know that, the only way is to attend to ourselves, to investigate ourselves. So Bhagavan is like a, well, Bhagavan is the greatest of all spiritual doctors. And like any great doctor, he is not so much concerned with the symptoms of our disease. He is concerned with the root cause of our disease. So he has correctly diagnosed what is the root cause of our disease and what is the remedy for that root cause. That is, if we cure, if the root cause is removed, then the symptoms will all disappear. So Bhagavan's teachings are wholly focused on the root cause of all our problems. In the old texts, it is generally said that the root problem is mula avidya, the root ignorance. Avidya here, ignorance, means ignorance of our own real nature. We do not know what we actually are. We know that we are, we know I am, but what I am, we do not know. So Bhagavan has not contradicted that, but he has clarified it. What is meant by avidya? According to Bhagavan, avidya is nothing but ego. That is, who is it who is ignorant? It is only ego that is ignorant. Of course, our real nature is pure awareness, so it is never ignorant of itself. So what we actually are is always aware of itself as it actually is. In other words, we are always aware of ourselves as we actually are. But now we seem to have risen as ego. And as ego, we are always aware I am, but we are not just aware I am. We are aware I am this body. I am this person. This adjunct mixed awareness, that is, this fundamental awareness I am, mixed with upadis, mixed with adjuncts, as I am this body, this is ego, this is avidya, this is maya. So Bhagavan has honed in on what exactly is avidya. Because if we take avidya to be something other than ourselves, then we'll be looking for some cause, we'll be looking for some solution outside ourselves. We'll be trying to find the answer in books or in the teachings of the sages or whatever. But Bhagavan has made it clear the whole purpose of all Vedantic teachings is to turn our attention back to ourselves, because we alone have a problem and we alone have a solution. That is, as ego, we have a problem. Our real nature alone is the solution. So being aware of ourselves as I am this body, that is avidya, that is the problem. Being aware of ourselves as we actually are, as I am I, That is the solution. So this Bhagavan has made clear in so many ways. Because he identified that the root problem is ego, he revealed to us what is the real nature of ego. He has revealed this in so many ways, but he has made this particularly clear in verses 24, 25 and 26 of Ulladhunapadu. If we understand these verses, we will understand what is the nature of ego and what is the means to get rid of ego. Because by understanding the nature of ego, we will know how to get rid of it. So what Bhagavan teaches us in verse 24, he begins by saying, Jado udal na ne nadu. This insentient body, this jado body, does not say I. When he says the body does not say I, what he means by does not say I is it's a metaphorical way of saying it is not aware of itself as I. That is, its body is jada. It's not at all aware. It's devoid of awareness. So it doesn't know itself as I. That's the first sentence. The second sentence is satchit udiyadu. Satchit. The real awareness, the being awareness, the existence awareness, satchit, does not rise. That is, satchit, the nature of satchit is just being, not rising and doing anything. So satchit is always just being. And then in the third sentence he says, ideil udalalava nan ondru udikum. In between, as the extent of a body, one thing I rises. What is the significance of this? That is, since this thing called I, since it is I, it's aware of itself as I, it is not the body, because the body is not aware of itself as I. But since it rises, it is not satchit. So it is neither satchit, nor is it the body, but it has borrowed from satchit that awareness I, because what is that satchit is that fundamental awareness of our own existence, I am. So ego has usurped, has misappropriated that fundamental awareness I am as if it's itself, and it has also misappropriated the body as if it is itself. So ego is neither the body nor is it satchit, but it partakes of the properties of both. That is why he says, one thing I rises as the extent of a body. And he also says, there's also one other word in this sentence. The last word in this sentence is ideal. Ideal means in between. What the significance of this word in between, firstly it means, it's again indicating that this thing called I that rises, it is not the body and it is not satchit, it's something in between. In between means it has got various significance. Firstly, it is the only link between satchit and this body. This body and world, they seem to exist. But in whose view do they seem to exist? Only in the view of ego. So ego is the link between satchit and this body and world and so on. That's one significance. Another significance is, if for example, I read a story in a newspaper and I'm not sure if it's entirely true or not. If I ask you, is this story true? You may tell me it is neither true nor false. It's somewhere, something in between. That means it's not entirely true, it's not entirely false. It's got some elements of truth in it, it's got some elements of fiction in it. Likewise, ego is in between in the sense that it is neither the body nor is it satchit, but it has borrowed the properties of both. So this is the nature of ego. And then he says in the next sentence, idu, this is chit jada granti. This is the knot that formed by the seeming entanglement of chit and jada. Chit means satchit, the pure awareness I am. Jada means the body. Of course, the pure awareness I am is never entangled with anything. It always remains pure as it is. But in the view of ourself as ego, this I am now seems to be entangled with this body. We take ourselves to be I am this body. So, but the body is jada, and I am is chit, is chaitanya, is the pure awareness. So it is an entanglement of the chit and the jada. That's why it's called chit jada granti. It is what binds them together. And so long as we rise as ego, we are aware of ourselves as I am this body. We are thereby bound to the limitations of this body. So the next word he says is bandham, bondage. Bondage is nothing but this false awareness that rises as I am this body, and it is nothing but ego. And then the next word he says is jivan. What is called jiva, the soul or the individual, is nothing but this false I that rises between the body and satchit, partaking of the nature of both. He then says nupame. Nupame means subtle body, the sukshma sarira. This is not the usual sense in which the term sukshma sarira is used. But usually in Vedanta Sastras, it is sukshma sarira is said to be the three of the five sheaths, the pranamaya kosha, manamaya kosha, and vijnanamaya kosha. But according to Bhagavan, Bhagavan uses the word sukshma sarira in a different sense here. He says the sukshma sarira, it's just this ego. That is everything else, all the five sheaths that make up the body are relatively gross. But this ego is the subtlest of all. There's also a reason why he says this is the nupame or sukshma sarira. He also says the same in Nana, in the fourth end of the fourth paragraph of Nana. Generally, it is said in the Vedanta Sastras, but what goes through series of births, what takes one birth after another, when the gross body dies, then what is it that goes on to a new life? It is generally said the subtle body. But Bhagavan is pointing out what actually is transmigrating or going from one body to another, so to speak, is only this ego. Ego takes along with it its vasanas. Its vasanas are what constitute the karana sarira or the anandamaya kosha. So it's just ego and its vasanas. The vasanas are the seeds that give rise to all the other koshas and to the whole world. So that's why Bhagavan says that what the subtle body actually is only this ego. And then the next word he says is ahande, ego. Ahande is a Tamil form of the Sanskrit word ahanta, which means ahamta, means I-ness. So that is ego. That's a word Bhagavan generally uses for the term ego. Sometimes he uses the word ahankara, but more generally he uses the word ahande. Then he says ichamsara. This samsara is nothing but ego. That is, the whole of this vast maya, this vast samsara, this vast manifest appearance, it's all in essence nothing but ego. So Bhagavan said this ego itself is samsara. So if we want to escape from samsara, it is not simply sufficient to take to outwardly take sannyasa, to shave our head and wear different colour clothes. That is not the real renunciation. If we want to be free of samsara, we need to be free of ego. Bhagavan used to say, the grahasta who is not aware of himself as I am a grahasta, himself or herself, is a better sannyasi than the sannyasi who thinks I am a sannyasi. So what do we need to renounce is this I am this or I am that. That is true sannyasa, according to Bhagavan. So if we want to be free of samsara, The only way to be free of samsara is not to go and sit in a cave in the Himalayas. It is to sit in the cave of our heart, to turn within and merge back into the source from which we rose. And finally, he says, this is manam, this is mind. What the mind essentially is only this ego, where I but rises as I am this body. So that's verse 24. In the next verse, verse 25, the subject he's talking about, he mentions in the last line, Uruvatra Payahande. Uruvatra Payahande means the formless phantom ego. Why does he call it a formless phantom ego? Why does he call it ego formless? He calls it formless because it has no form of its own. Though it all is always aware of itself as I am this body does not belong to ego. Ego is misappropriated this body, taking it to be itself. So since it has no form of its own, it's formless, Uruvatra. And it is a phantom. Why does he call it a phantom or a ghost, a pei, a pisasa, pechacha? It is because it has no substance of its own. It borrows its substance from Satchit. The substance is its existence and its awareness. It is borrowed from Satchit. And its form it is borrowed from the body. So it is neither the body nor is it Satchit. So it is just a formless phantom. It's got neither form nor substance. Something with form or substance doesn't exist at all. So it's wholly unreal. But like a ghost, it seems to be real. How does it seem to be real? How does it come into existence? Well, we can't say this is how it comes into existence. That is, it doesn't come into existence except by grasping the form of a body as itself. So what he says from the beginning of this verse, though he mentions the subject, well, formless phantom ego, that's only mentioned in the last line, but that's what he's talking about in this verse. So if we go through the verse sentence by sentence, the first sentence he says, Urupatri undam, grasping form, it comes into existence. That means grasping the form of a body, it comes into existence. That is, without grasping the form of a body, we cannot rise as ego. Urupatri nikkam, grasping form, it stands. That is, that is, as soon as we rise as ego, we grasp the form of a body as ourself, and we cannot stand, we cannot endure, we cannot remain as ego without continuing to grasp the form of a body as I. So the form he refers to in the first two sentences, Urupatri undam, Urupatri nikkam, grasping form, it comes into existence, grasping form, it stands. That is particularly referring to the body, which, as he says in verse 5 of Uludhanapattu, is a Udal Panchakosa Uru. The body is a form of five sheaves. So it's this form of five sheaves that we grasp and come into existence and stand. Then in the third sentence he says, Urupatri undu mika ongum. Grasping and feeding on forms, it flourishes abundantly. Here the forms he's referring to are all the other forms. As soon as we rise as as I am this body, we become aware of other forms. As Bhagavan says in verse 4 of Uludhanapattu, Uruvam tan ayin ulhu paramatran. If oneself is a form, the world and God will be likewise. If oneself is not a form, who can see their forms and how? So all other forms seem to exist only because we've taken ourselves to be the form of this body. So as soon as we take ourselves to be the form of this body, this whole world seems to exist, the external world and also the internal world of our thoughts and feelings and memories and perceptions and so on. So both the external world and the internal world, all forms, both the seemingly physical forms and the mental forms, all come into existence only when we rise as I am this body. So having risen as I am this body and standing as I am this body, we then are constantly grasping other forms. How did this formless phantom grasp forms? Grasping form, we grasp forms by being aware of them. That is, ego is a formless phantom. It's got no hands or legs to grasp anything. It grasps in its awareness. In other words, by attending to any form, we are grasping it. So since ego is a formless phantom, all the forms that it grasps are things other than itself. So attending to anything other than ourself, that is how ego comes into existence, how it stands, and how it it flourishes abundantly. So it feeds itself. Urupatri undu. Undu means feeding itself. So grasping and feeding on form, it grows abundantly. So by attending to anything other than ourself, we are nourishing and sustaining ego. And then he says, Uruvittu urupatram, leaving form in grass form. That is, since ego cannot stand for a moment without grasping form, whenever it leaves one form, it grasps another form. When we go from one state to another state, in dream, for example, we are experiencing ourselves as I in this body. As soon as we leave that, we grasp this waking body as I. So we're going from one body to another, grasping one. As soon as we leave one form, we grasp another form. When we don't grasp any other form, any form, we subside in sleep. Ego dissolves. But then it rises up again, grasping form. So such is the nature of ego. So long as we are grasping form, we are nourishing and sustaining ego. And as I say, grasping form means attending to anything other than ourselves, being aware of anything other than the fundamental awareness I am, being aware of anything other than Satchit is grasping form. And then the most important sentence of all, Bhagavan then says, Tedinal otum pidicum. That means if sought, it takes flight. Or more literally, if it seeks, it takes flight. But what he means by if it seeks is if this ego investigates itself, it will take flight, it will run away. Why does he say this? That is, since the nature of ego is to rise, stand, feed itself and flourish by grasping form, if instead of trying to grasp any form, it tries to grasp itself, what will happen? Since it is a formless phantom, it's got when it tries to grasp itself, it will dissolve, but it will subside and dissolve back into itself. Because to the extent to which we attend to ourselves, we are thereby letting go of other things. And without holding on to other things, we cannot rise or stand as ego. So by holding on to ourselves, ego will subside and disappear. So by turning, the nature of ego is to rise, stand and flourish by attending to anything other than itself, and to subside and dissolve back into its source by attending to itself. What Bhagavan means by otum pidicum, it takes flight, it runs away, is it'll dissolve back into its source. So ego rises, stands and flourishes by attending to things other than itself. It will subside and dissolve back into its source by attending to itself. This is the unique clue that has not been revealed, that has not been revealed so clearly in any of the ancient texts, as far as I'm aware. Bhagavan has made this clear. The nature of ego, it will rise, stand and flourish by attending to anything other than itself. It will subside and dissolve back into its source by attending to itself. So how can we surrender ourselves? So long as we're attending to anything other than ourselves, even if with great love we're attending to a name or form of God, we are still sustaining ourselves as ego. If we want to give ourselves wholly to God, we need to let go of everything else, even the thought of God as another. We need to cling only to ourselves, to I am. I am is the true form of God, because God, Guru and Self are all one and the same. Ishvara, Guru, Atma are one and the same according to Bhagavan. So the true form of God, the true Swarupa of God, the true Swarupa of Guru is that which shines in our heart as I. So the highest devotion is to hold on to I am. That is surrender. As Bhagavan says in the 13th paragraph, the first sentence of the 13th paragraph of Nana, Who Am I? He says, Adma chintane tavira, vera chintane kalamba vedaku, satram idam kodamal, atmanishta paranai iripade, tanne isanaku alipadam. That is, there Bhagavan defines what is surrender, what is giving ourselves to God. Atmanishta paranai iripade, tanne isanaku alipadam. Being as atmanishta param, one who is firmly established as oneself, alone is giving oneself to God. So how to be firmly established as ourself? He indicates in the first clause. Anma chintane tavira, vera chintane kalamba vidaku satram idam kodamal. That means without giving even the slightest room to the rising of any thought other than atma chintana. So we shouldn't give room to the rising of any chintana other than atma chintana. All other chintanas are about things other than ourselves. Atma chintana means, literally it means thought of ourself. It means self-attentiveness, swarupa dhyana or atma vichara. So by clinging to self-attentiveness, we thereby give no room to the rising of any other thought, and thus we remain as atmanishta param, one who is firmly established as ourself. And that, according to Bhagavan, alone is giving ourselves to God. So that is intimately connected with what he says here. Grasping anything other than ourself, ego rises, stands and flourishes. Only by grasping ourself will ego subside. So the only way to surrender ourself, to give ourself wholly to God, to surrender ourself completely to Bhagavan, is to hold on to this fundamental awareness of our own existence, I am. Because when he says, Pedinalotum piticum, if sought it takes flight. Ego is a formless phantom. So when we try to hold on to this formless phantom, there's no form to hold on to. So there's only the formless substance, I am. When we hold on to that I am, we thereby subside and merge back into that I am, and I am alone remains. I am is Satchit. So by when we are investigating ourselves, as Bhagavan says in one place in Maharsha's Gospel, it is recorded that Bhagavan once explained, when he was explained that ego is chit-chatter-granti, and he says, in your investigation into the source of the aham-vritti means I thought, it's another name for ego, in your investigation into the source of the aham-vritti, you take the essential chit aspect of ego. That is, ego is the chit-chatter-granti. But what is it we are investigating when we are practicing atma-vichara? We are not investigating the jada portion. We are not investigating this body or this mind or the thoughts or the desires or anything else. We're investigating the essential chit aspect of ego. In other words, we're investigating Satchit. We're investigating only I am. Who am I? That is what we are investigating. So, and only by investigating who am I will the mind subside and dissolve back into its source. So that alone is atma vichara, that alone is surrender. And then in verse 26, to clarify, that is when Bhagavan says in verse 24, but the body does not say I, and Satchit doesn't rise, but in between something called something called I rises as the extent of a body, that could make us, we could infer from that, oh, there are two things, there's Satchit and there's a body, and between this spurious I rises, and no, there's no such thing. What actually exists is only Satchit. The body and world come into existence, they seem to exist only when we rise as ego. So when he says grasping form, it comes into existence, what he implies is not that the form is there waiting to be grasped by us. As soon as we rise as ego, we project this body and world and grasp them. This he makes clear in verse 26. What he says in verse 26 is, Ahande undayin anetum undahum. If ego comes into existence, everything comes into existence. Ahande indrail indruanatum. If ego doesn't exist, everything doesn't exist. Ahande yabamam. Ego itself is everything. That is, all other things, all this body and this world, they come into existence only when we rise as ego. This is our experience. In sleep, we are not aware of any body or any world. When we wake up or begin to dream, we project a body and world, and we see them, and they seem to be there, existing independent of us, but actually they exist only in the view of ego. So ego is the seed that gives rise to everything. So in the third sentence he says, Ahandeya Yabamam, ego itself is everything. In the Upanishads it is said, all this is Brahman. But Bhagavan what Bhagavan teaches us here is a refined form of this teaching. In what sense is everything Brahman? In the view of Brahman, no body or world or anything exists. It's only in the view of ego that everything exists. So everything is only ego. If we investigate ego, we'll find there's not. It's only Brahman. If we look carefully at the snake, we'll find it's just a rope. Likewise, if we look carefully at ego, we will see that it is nothing but Brahman. It's nothing but pure awareness. So what ego essentially is only Brahman. So only in that sense is Brahman everything. That is, everything is ego, and ego is Brahman, therefore everything is Brahman. But Bhagavan introduces this essential intermediate step, because Bhagavan is, as I said, he's the great spiritual doctor. He's diagnosed what is the root cause of our illness. The root cause of our illness, the root cause of all our problems, is our rising as ego. So he's constantly emphasizing that ego is the root of all problems. So he says ego itself is everything. That is, everything else seems to exist only in the view of ego. So just like a dream is nothing but the dreamer. When we are dreaming, the dream body and dream world and all the people we see in the world and all the vivahara that is going on in that dream world, everything is nothing but ourselves. We are projecting, it is our own mind that we are seeing as this dream world. Likewise, ego is seeing as all this world is nothing but itself. So ego itself is everything. Ego is the substance that gives rise to the appearance of everything else. What everything is essentially is just ego. And what ego essentially is just Brahman. But to know that ego is Brahman, we need to investigate ourselves. So in order to experience Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, we need to investigate ourselves. When we investigate ourselves, we find that we are not ego, we are only Brahman. Just like the snake is only a rope, but the rope is not a snake. The rope is never a snake. The rope is always only a rope. What seems to be a snake is only a rope. What seems to be ego is only Brahman. But in order to know that, we need to investigate ourselves. Therefore, he concludes this verse by saying that after saying ego itself is everything, he concludes by saying, Adalal yadu idu endrunadale ovadal yabameno or. Therefore, know that investigating what this ego is giving up everything. He doesn't even say ego, what this is, but this here refers to ego. So investigating what this is giving up everything. Why is it giving up everything? Because, as he explained in the previous verse, if we investigate ego, it will take flight, it will subside and disappear and dissolve back into its source. Tadinalotam pidikam. So if we investigate what this ego is, it will cease to exist. And since everything else seems to exist only in the view of ego, when ego ceases to exist, everything else will cease to exist. As he says in the second sentence of his verse, Ahande indrel indruanatam. If ego doesn't exist, everything doesn't exist. So by investigating ego, we are giving up everything. So this alone is true renunciation. This is tyaga, this is sannyasa. So if you want to be a true sannyasi, you need not shave your head, you need not change the colour of your clothes, you need not change your outward life at all. It 'Tis inwardly the change needs to be made. And we make that change by not allowing our attention to go outwards, by turning within and holding on to this fundamental awareness of our own existence, I am. Because I am alone is Satchit. That alone is what we actually are. That alone is what actually exists. As Bhagavan says in the first sentence of the seventh paragraph of Nana, Yatatamai ulladu atmasvarupamondre. What actually exists is only atmasvarupa. Atmasvarupa means the real nature of ourself. What is the real nature of ourself? Only I am. As Bhagavan often said, I am I. That alone is the truth. Now we have a false identity as I am this body, I am this person, I am such a poor, important person, I am Michael, I am very, very important. We have so much ahankara, ahambhava, so much abhimana we have for this person we take ourselves to be. This is all false. What we actually are is not this or that. What we actually are is only I am and nothing but I am. So Bhagavan often said, aham aham, nan nan, I am I. I am nothing other than I. And he says in Hridya Guhara Madhye, Hridya Guhara Madhye, Kevalam Brahma Matram, Aham Aham Iti Sakshat Atma Rupena Bhati. That is, that. What is Brahman? Brahman is that which is always shining in the center of our heart as Aham Aham, I am I, because what we actually are is only I am I. So we, in order to give up this false identification, this ego, I am this body, we need to hold on only to I am. And the more we hold on to I am, the more we will subside and dissolve back into that. And when we dissolve back into that, then we will be clearly aware of ourselves as we actually are. We will not be aware of ourselves as I am Brahman or Aham Brahmasmi or Shivaham or anything. We will just be aware of ourselves as Aham Aham, because nothing other than I exists. What is Brahman? Brahman is that which Aham Brahmasmi means Brahman is I. There's no Brahman other than I. So Bhagavan distilled the whole essence of Vedanta into his fundamental truth. Aham aham, I alone am I. So in order to realize this truth that I alone am I, we need to hold on to I. So to know Brahman, we need to investigate and hold on to I. So Bhagavan has presented the teachings of Advaita Vedanta in such a simple, deep and subtle way, but and most importantly, in such a practical way. All that is necessary is to investigate who am I, to hold on to this awareness I am. That is what all of Bhagavan's teachings are pointing at. That is also what all the ancient texts are pointing at, but the point is missed, the practical implication is missed. If we are thinking about Brahman and so many things, the whole point of the Mahavakyas is to say you are Brahman. There's no Brahman other than you. So to know Brahman, you must investigate yourself. So Bhagavan has highlighted the practical implication of all Vedanta Sastras. So in Bhagavan is the essence of the essence of the essence. That is the essence of all religions, of all the Vedas, is Vedanta. The essence of all Vedanta is Advaita, and the essence of all Advaita is the teachings of our Bhagavan Ramana, whose birthday we are celebrating today. Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Arunachala Ramanaya. What is true darshan? Darshan is not seeing a person. What is the true Ramana darshanam? The true Ramana Darshanam, Bhagavan himself made it clear, the true Ramana Darshanam is only Swarupa Darshanam. Bhagavan is that which is always shining in our heart as I. Ariyati Tarajivara Dahavari Jugohil Arivairami Paramatuman Arunachala Ramanan. Arunachala Ramana is that Paramatma, but it's always shining, blissfully shining in the heart, in the cave of the heart lotus of all different jivas, beginning with Hari. So from the highest god to the lowest ant, that which is shining in the heart of all of us, that is Arunachala Ramana. So the true darshanam is only Swarupa Darshanam. If we want to see Bhagavan as he is, we need to see who am I. Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Arunachala Ramanaya.